human flourishing. Like, how can we be kinder to one another, love on one another, no matter where someone is from and no matter what they identify as and no matter who they are? Like, how do we support and love one another to cause human flourishing in our life? This is the conversation, the beautiful conversation I just had with Dr. Joshua Caraballo. And he is an industrial organizational psychologist, and he is showing people the deep passion of human flourishing, embracing awe-inspiring experiences, and how to truly live in a place where we can all be there for one another. I just absolutely love this conversation. I cannot wait for you to hear this. What's up, everyone? I am so excited today because we are honored to have this amazing human here, right? So his work and life are a testament to the power of purpose and passion and human connection. So Dr. Joshua Caraballo, I probably said that wrong, is an industrial organizational psychologist currently thriving in Denver, Colorado. Now, his dedication goes beyond the workplace. He has carried a deep passion for fostering human flourishing. And I really love this kind of conversation. I'm so glad you're here with us. I want you to touch our audience. We have a really great audience too, Dr. Joshua. We have like a lot of like organizational leaders. We have a lot of entrepreneurs, solopreneurs and stuff that are here. So I want to get into like what is human flourishing and all of that. But before we do that, I do want to know a little bit more about you. So give us a little bit about who you are.
Absolutely. And thank you again for having me, Nina. It is an absolute pleasure to be here. And feel free to call me Josh or Joshua.
Okay.
So I was born in Staten Island, New York. And from my earliest memories, I recall wanting to put on Bible plays for my parents. I was brought up in a strict Jehovah's Witness household. And people might be thinking like, wait, why are we even going with that as the beginning? But stay tuned. You know, it all gets connected. in a great way in my mind anyway. So this storytelling, as most people already understand and know, that comes from the Bible when you're utilizing stories and acting them out, is really about a parable, right? It's about something that you're learning and growing from. And in addition to that, the stories are usually pretty interesting. So that was my exposure to it. And before I even knew what acting was, what storytelling was, I had a natural gravitation towards doing this sort of thing. And I would do it every year for my parents' anniversary. I would put the whole thing together with props and memorization and include family members, you name it. So there I was developing this skill set and this understanding, if you will, about looking at the world and looking at human behavior and figuring out ways to utilize storytelling to enable people to see what their lives look like, why they make the choices that they do in order to assist them to make better decisions. And so as a natural consequence, I will fast forward to my doctoral degree, and we could talk about anything in between that you would like. But this is the trajectory that took me and my passion to understanding how to utilize human behavior in addition to storytelling so that we can help people flourish.
I love that. So first of all, I just want to like touch a little bit because I love like stories of families and stuff like that. And what a beautiful gift, right? To go and give them that with the props and the storytelling and all of this great stuff. So then you got into psychology. Was there a wall, or did it hit against each other? Was there something that you found contentious about doing both things? Because sometimes religion, psychology, like I just wanted to know how that, you know, came about, or how did you manage that?
Absolutely. I will start with myself. I identify as a gay man. And for the longest time, I was taught that God, or the God that I knew and was taught of as a young person, was someone who did not agree with the type of behavior that I would more than probably engage in being a gay man. And having to square that away with the fact that I was gay and that there was actually nothing I could really do to change that. Now, some people might disagree with that sort of way of looking at things, but from my perspective, and I can't speak for all gay people, I tried really hard to be straight. And the more that I tried to do so, to try to fit in, not only with the religion, but with society in general, because keep in mind, I was growing up in the early 80s and 90s. And so the world was a little bit different. And queer people, generally speaking, were not as accepted as they are today. Although now things seem to be going a little bit backwards, but that's a whole nother, you know, discussion. But the point is that I think in order to flourish, in order to get to some semblance of understanding and moving forward in the world, we have to start with ourselves. And for me, it was that dichotomy of how do I figure out a way to get through this wall, if you will, of my own behavior, square that away. Because what I was doing as a youth was internalizing the hate and negativity about who I was as a person. And as long as I was doing that, there was no way that I could find ways of flourishing and being successful, however you define success, because that's a whole other thing, right? It's how we define these things is really, really important. So squaring that away meant that I had to figure out how to be spiritual or religious, if you will, how I personally can believe in a God, because I do, but also not think of God as hating me or wanting to destroy me, because that is a detrimental thing. For the longest time, what I ended up doing was abusing drugs and alcohol, because that was my way of quieting all of the noise in my head that was telling me I was a horrible person. And the repercussions of that were far reaching for me. So it took me a very long time to try to undo that successfully. And psychology was a very helpful way of allowing me to do that. And so I get to the crux of what your question is. Like, how do you square away something like psychology when it doesn't always align with something like religion? Again, to this day, I still believe in God, although most of the literature out there does not support any sort of belief system in God. And I think it's okay to have both. I think one of the most difficult things to do in our life is to hold two disparate sort of belief systems and still function and still be okay with that. Yeah. And I think, again, being that I had the opportunity to have that challenge throughout my youth and to figure out ways of, I wouldn't even say conquering, because it's a constant calibration throughout your life to where you can reprioritize what your purpose is, what is meaningful to you. And you keep doing that. And as you do that, you're holding these two kind of like polar opposite things and still finding a way to move forward. I think that is extremely important and a big portion of how we find our own flourishing in life.
Mm-hmm. And that's not an easy thing to do either, right? No. So how do you approach, how do you help people approach that, right? To take these two differences of things that we believe in, because I think we all do. We all have like these two different ways of maybe looking at life or living our lives, and still trying to flourish. And I think I agree with you. I think that's possible, right?
Yes.
And so I'm just wondering, how can people like reorganize that or put that in their lives to thrive instead of just survive, right? But to actually thrive. So how do we do that?
There, one of the things, because it's multifaceted, and so it'll take a lot of different variables for people, and it'll be different for people based on your history and what you've learned and your experiences in the world, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
But one of those big things that have been beneficial for me is the concept of all or nothing thinking. It is a cognitive distortion. And so when we look at the world and we see people who are adopting, let's say, ideologies that just seem so off, and we have collected facts in our lives to where we feel as if, well, you know, this doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand why this person is believing or acting this way. Our task, if we want it to be, is to find the truth nuggets that exist in those circumstances, because there will always be nuggets of truth. How do I know that? Because otherwise, human beings would not gravitate towards that very thing. And why is that important? Because if there is truth in everything, and we do want to seek it out, that is the connection point by which we can not only understand people, but also have better conversations and connect with people. I think that is truly important in breaking the barrier as to this sort of like disparate way of thinking that it's all or nothing. It's either this or that. I have the right way. You have the wrong way. And as long as we think that way, we will never, look eye to eye. We'll never have this connection, this human connection that we need. We'll never grow as individuals and as communities and as a nation, which is what we sorely need at this moment in time. Again, this is not a panacea, what I just mentioned, but because there's so many different tactics and ways to look at things, I think to me, this is the very first thing or a good first step for us to try doing. Let's challenge ourselves every time we come across someone who just seems to be adamantly into this world that we were just like, how the heck can they ever have gotten to this point in time? I could pull up a Google search right now and show that what they're saying is absolutely wrong. But what good is that in terms of us trying to understand each other? And let's also acknowledge that it feels good to feel like we have something over someone else, even if that's not what our intent is. That when you feel like you have something better than someone else, there's a good feeling that comes along with that. And you can actually, that actually can make you feel high and you want more of it. And so you can get caught in this cycle to where, whether it's religion or otherwise, I have a better way of living my life and I need to impart that upon other people. And if you don't want to do that, it's because you're stupid, you're uneducated, or whatever the case might be.
And I think that's a really clever way of dividing people. Right? Because when you divide people, it's easier to just cause destruction. I mean, that's just true. Right. And, can I share a personal story with you?
Please.
My son is gay, my oldest son. And I was very much into a religion that was like dead set against it. Right. And so I remember being very angry with my son that he came out as gay. And so we fought a lot. We had a lot of fights and battles and blah, blah, blah. And he was becoming disrespectful. And I think it was because I was being disrespectful too, you know? So it was that. And I'll never forget this, Josh. And this is just a personal experience. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting in my car, weeping and crying. I was sitting in front of the church and I was angry that my son was gay. And I was yelling at God and saying, you know, I don't want anything to do with him and da da da, like all of the stupid things that I was saying. I was really pissed off. And I remember almost audibly, Josh, almost audibly that it scared me, this voice that said, that is my son. How dare you cut off my son? And he said, you are the only connection he has to me. How dare you, right? It was so scary that it completely convicted me. I immediately asked for forgiveness. Immediately. I never told anyone about it because I was afraid to tell anyone about it. And do you know that 10 years later, 10 years, my son is talking to me and we're talking about God. And I said to him, I said, hey, babe, you know, I'm sorry that we were talking about religion. I said, I know that you probably think I'm always, you know, Bible beating you or something, but I just want you to live a good life and all that. He goes, Mom, don't you know that if it wasn't for you, I would have no connection to God? He literally used the same exact words that I heard by myself in that car that night, where God said, don't you know that you are the only connection he has to me? How dare you?
Wow.
It was the same exact words, Josh, right? Which blew my mind because I realized God loved him.
Right. And I agree. Let's also acknowledge that not everyone that goes through a religious experience, because I agree and I feel similarly to your son, to where in hindsight, I think it's important to look at those truths, those little gold nuggets, if you will. If I was not brought up in a Jehovah's Witness religion, and I know Jehovah's Witness religion isn't always deemed like Christianity, but we did at that time.
Right.
And looking back, I agree. This was my only pathway during my formative years to understand and create some sort of connection with a higher power. Now, what that looked like, I had to sort of reevaluate and recalibrate what my relationship with God looked like, and then tell myself and believe, truly believe and trust that God does love me as I am. The other thing that was hard for me is that a lot of times gay individuals or queer people, generally speaking, are reduced down a lot of times from a religious standpoint to an act, a sexual act. And how disrespectful is that? Because if you do that to any person, I mean, you know, that's really, it's not fair to them. There's so much more. Go ahead.
Can I push back with you just a second? I just want to hear your thoughts on this. I also believe that sometimes the gay or queer individual kind of comes off that way, you know, like up front, right? And the reason I say that is because as I raise my son, he's gay. Like I said, he's already in his 30s, right? He lives his own life. He's beautiful. He's a great human being, like a great human being. And I've never, ever, ever let him identify as I'm gay first. I've always had him identify as I am Ernest first. Like that's his name, right? That I am this human being. I happen to be gay. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think it should be a part of their life. If that's what they are, if that's what their life is, it's not like I identify myself. Hey, Dr. Josh, I'm heterosexual. How are you? I'm Nina. Right. Like, I think we should just be human.
Right.
And people should live their lives. And I think that sometimes this is just a little, this is just the way my mind is thinking. I just think that sometimes if you're coming off as I'm gay, as opposed to I'm Josh or I'm Ernest or I'm whoever, that maybe that's the contention or that's the reason why it's being shown first. What do you think of that?
I love this conversation. So thank you for bringing it up. Identity is important. I would go so far as to say we should allow people to identify how they want to, and then for them to figure it out themselves, just like anything else in life. When you tell an adult, because I'm not talking about children, children is different when they're growing up before they reach the age of 18, or I would say even a little bit after, because the brain science shows that your brain is still developing for guys up until the age of 30, and for a woman, it's about the age of 25. So, you know, those are considerations as well. We're still learning in our up until the age of 30, and we're learning our whole life. But, you know, what I'm talking about is brain development specifically, and then the brain can still change afterwards. So identity, yes. I mean, there is plenty of work out there to show like how closely you identify with something or how big or small that portion of that of your identity is does make a difference. But I also feel like when there are portions of your identity under attack, as a natural consequence, there are individuals, like let's just say I'm a Latino. So when I feel like my Latino part of my identity is under attack, I could very well identify more or less. Less would mean that I'm trying to save myself or hide from, you know, and whatever that attack is. Identifying more would mean that I'm standing my ground and doubling down and saying, oh, no, you don't. And there's room for both of those things. And who's to say that from my standpoint anyway, because I'm not trying to critique how you bring up your children, but what I'm saying is from an adult to an adult, it's like, who am I to tell someone else that you need to double down or be less of that portion of your identity because you need to figure that out for yourself. Some people are going to say, okay, Latinos are under attack. I am going to make that a smaller part of my identity so that I can save my cognition and energy so that I can do the things that I need to do to survive. That is okay. That is valid. And then some people will say, oh, no, you don't. I'm going to double down on this. And how dare you? So let's try to understand more why people who are under attack and constantly trying to be vigilant will make these adjustments in their identity, because that's how they are trying to navigate through the world and create their own well-being. And I think, hey, whatever works best for them is fine. Now, you have a great point. We have options here. I think that is the takeaway. If you are identifying a huge portion of your identity as gay, is that truly all that you are?
Right. I mean,
there's so many other aspects of who you are. And so there's an exercise where it's called the identity bubble exercise where you just draw all the portions and facets of your identity and you use bubbles to kind of show what those are. And the larger the bubble, the more you identify. And then you can have the bubbles sort of like overlap. And the more that they overlap, the more connected they are. So I also identify as an artist. I'm a visual artist and a performing artist, but that's not what I do on a day-to-day. So it's a smaller bubble for me, but it's connected deeply to all the work that I do. Because as I had mentioned before, storytelling is a huge part of what I do. And I try to incorporate it as much as possible. I'm also a researcher, you know, so I can go on and on. But the point is, like, where is that identity bubble when it comes to being a gay man or just a queer person, generally speaking? Mm-hmm. It's important that I understand that, not because I'm trying to replicate or do what somebody else is telling me, but because I'm figuring out what is best for me in this world and what is going to forge the greatest amount of flourishing for me. Mm-hmm. And that's important. And it doesn't mean that there's no other considerations outside of you, but at the end of the day, you're the one that has to live with yourself and your identity, and nobody else can really tell you what that should be.
Right. Okay. So then how do we bring people together to have a flourishing life, community, organizations, right? Because this is important. This is important, Josh, because we're all human beings. Mm-hmm. And this is just me. I believe we're all created in the image of God and we should be respectful and loving towards one another,
yes,
right? So yes. How does the person who has a way of identifying, or they this is how they identify and that's, you know, they don't see beyond that, and the person who just doesn't see them but for what they identify as, right? We got to change this. We have to change this.
Right.
I think we should see each other with love and kindness and gentleness and respect and honor. And I'm just trying to wrap my head around, because things have been so politically and socially like tearing people apart. And and I just don't, I personally don't ever use the words identify as. I just don't. That's just, I just live my life, right?
Yeah.
And I also, but I also love so many different people. Like I told you, I have a son who's gay. I have a nephew who's trans. I have, you know, people who are straight and people who are not. I don't care, right? I love them, period, right?
So let's start off with negative stereotypes.
Yes.
Negative stereotypes are something that come automatically to us. Why is that important? Because you don't even realize that it's happening until you bring it to your consciousness. That's how automaticity works. So when we talk about the sexualization of queer people, generally speaking, is that a truism? Yes, there are people who are hypersexualized in the queer world under the queer umbrella. But this is where we challenge ourselves. Does that exist in other circles? It sure does. Mm-hmm. Now, why are we thinking or connecting when we see or think about a queer person about hypersexuality? It's because of a lot of different things. It's because of what we've been exposed to in mass media. It's because of the narratives that are out there. Some are just trying to expose what they think are the truths. Others actually have nefarious sort of considerations underneath. Now let's just stop there for a second and let's apply that whole thing to someone who identifies as being religious. And let's just say they say to themselves, like, my religion is my everything to me. And I adopt Christianity and I'm a Catholic or whatnot. There are all sorts of negative stereotypes that come from perhaps the queer world assessing somebody who identifies that way. And we have an opportunity to do just the same thing. Instead of automatically thinking this person hates me, this person doesn't want me alive, this person wants me to be destroyed, this person thinks that God thinks of me as a hateful person, let's challenge ourselves. Is there truth to that? Yes. Is that everyone that exists? No. And it's the same thing with hypersexualizing queer people. There are hypersexual people everywhere. There are people that go to extremes in every facet of life.
Yeah.
That's just part of it. Now, when you look at it from a research perspective, which is what I love, let's just talk very quickly, because I'm not trying to be political with you, but we talk about the fringes that exist on either side of the political spectrum. And these extremes, if you will, have been found by the New York Times, which, you know, some people may say, I don't like the New York Times. But for me, out of all the reporting that's out there, this is not just some Joe Schmo blog. These are people who actually go through the rigor of looking at the science to find out. And on average, 5 to 6% on either side is what the number is of individuals who identify, self-identify as being in those categories of extremism on either side. Could it be a little bit more or a little bit less? Perhaps, but let's just say for argument's sake, it's 10% on either side. That leaves 90% of those
people
not being extreme. Mm-hmm, and so when we come across someone,
I love that.
There's a 90% chance that they don't fit the negative stereotype, especially if it is negative. But why are we gravitating towards negativity and negative stereotypes more, generally speaking, above and beyond the positive aspects? And why do we have to work extra hard? It's because our brain is built in such a way to gravitate towards the negativity. Why?
Yeah.
Because that's how we save ourselves. That's right. How we survive. So you go into a room full of thousands of people, your brain is automatically trying to figure out where the potential harm is. And it's doing it very, very quickly in a fraction of a second. That's how we are built. And so once we understand that, and we're looking at someone that we hardly know, and we're categorizing them in a negative way, and there's all that fear-based understanding, and there's a good reason why that's happening. And so what that means is that we have to take a conscious effort,
yeah,
a purposeful way of what you just mentioned before, leading with love and understanding and compassion and saying, what else is there? How do I challenge myself? Mm-hmm. There is a very small opportunity that this person is here on this earth to harm individuals, but it is a much greater likelihood that that's not the case. And so it becomes my job, if I want it to, and if I truly love people and individuals and I want to bring communities together, to figure out what that is.
Yeah.
And to do that on a larger scale. That's how we bring more human flourishing and well-being, because we're allowing people to be their authentic selves, and also connecting people together and not trying to find ways of just continuing this rift with individuals. This is something we sorely need, and it's not going to happen overnight, because it wasn't built up, this rift, overnight.
Right.
I think it is well worth the effort, because I don't want to be against my Republican neighbor who has voted for Trump. I want to understand them, because by being against them, like, that's just a waste of my energy. What's a better use of my energy is to say, hey, I'm bringing you a present. It's the holiday season. Even if you still reject me afterwards, I'm going to incrementally do my best. As long as nobody's trying to actively harm me, right? Then that's a different sort of scenario and conversation. But like I said, 90% of the time in my mind, that's not the case. It's just that that negative stereotype is keeping me from connecting with my neighbor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, and honestly, that's been fueled to us. That's been fueled to us, because it's a bull, to be honest, right? I don't care about the person being a Democrat, Republican. It doesn't matter to me.
Right.
I'm actually an independent. I don't believe in either fringes, right? So my neighbor, for example, you know, we moved here. There were an elderly couple. We were helping them take their garbage out, you know, watch their home, and they both passed away.
No.
And we were helping them throughout their whole time. Not one time, Josh, did I ask them if they were Republican or Democrat. Right. Not one time did I ask them what their political views are, who they liked, who they did. I didn't care. Right. They happened to be an older white couple. I'm Latina. Right. I don't care. I never did care, because I care about the person. I care about the human. I always have been that way. I'm grateful, because I've grew up with so many different races and religions and sexual orientations. So it didn't matter to me. But before, you know, because you're fascinating to talk to, by the way. Oh, I love talking to you. And I love it. I love it. If you could leave the audience with like one key practice, right, that they can foster compassion and connection in their lives, what would you say to them? What would be like that one key practice they can do to start changing the world a little bit at a time?
Please keep in mind that human hierarchy is something that we naturally gravitate towards. Even in the Bible times, when there was no king, the people longed for a king.
Yeah, yeah.
And by filling a space that puts you in a place that feels like you are in a higher category than other human beings, it releases all sorts of chemicals within your brain to make you feel really good. There are so many other ways to feel good. Mm. But when we get trapped in only looking at one way to feel good, it becomes a cycle that is very deleterious. Because what it's doing, once we have a hierarchy, it becomes easier to treat people differently.
Yeah.
And no human being is exempt from this feeling.
Yeah.
It happens in organizations all the time. You get a promotion to become a director or a VP or a CEO. Think about what happens. You have to check yourself constantly.
Yeah, yeah.
And the same thing can happen in everyday behavior. So religion, there's nothing inherently wrong with religion. There's so many great things that it does. But think about how many times you feel like you are now superior because you have something that other people don't. And because of that, they need to do the same things as you. Mm-hmm. There is not just one way to get to a place. Some people might think that this is the only way. My religion is the best way. But there are many, many different ways to fall in love with God, to have a relationship with God, or not to have a relationship with God and still flourish. As hard as that might be for some people to wrap their heads around, we need to challenge ourselves to allow that to happen. Because once we start thinking that our way is better, and I'm not talking about things that are obvious, like don't steal, like don't murder someone. And even those, there are nuances. Like if somebody's coming in to murder my grandmother and I happen to be there and I murder them first, you know, that there are nuances to everything. So that I go back to, let's stop thinking in all or nothing terms. That is a cognitive distortion across the board. There are truisms to everything. There are ways that we can look at things, and mm-hmm. we have to stop thinking that we are better than anyone else just because we have more education or experience, or we found a way to find ourselves to flourish. And I even apply that to myself. I've been through a lot in my life. I've found ways to turn that around. But whenever somebody asks me, what is the template? What are the takeaways? I always say the same thing. These things are the things that have worked for me. Psychology, as an example, has been a huge thing for me in my life to make me come to a better place. However, that doesn't mean it's the best thing for everyone. Same thing with religion. Sometimes for religion, my father was abusing drugs and alcohol. He belonged to gangs. He hurt a lot of people in his life. And when he found the Jehovah's Witness religion, it gave him the structure that he needed. He found the very thing that turned his life around. His story, he's not alone in that. There are many, many other people out there that have turned their lives around through all sorts of different things. Religion is not the only thing. And I know that people don't like to hear that all the time. What psychology is also helpful to understand is that if you eschew religion altogether, you still need to find a way to live for more than yourself. You still need to find a way to forge some type of spirituality in your life in order to have true well-being. So for those out there that might have been harmed or hurt by religion and you feel like, to me, I will never go back. Keep in mind a couple of things. You are engaging in all or nothing thinking. So what are the facets of religion that you can kind of like just gravitate towards if you're if you're willing and able and ready for that sort of thing? And if you're not ready for that conversation, then that's fine because it might be too close to when you were harmed. But when you are ready, challenge yourself because, again, we're painting all one sector a certain way. And in addition to that, don't think of religion as the panacea for your life. Try to forge as many different aspects as you possibly can because it's a multifaceted thing and it looks different for everybody.
That is so good. So really, you do have to check yourself. I mean, at the end of the day, you're saying pause and really ask yourself these questions. Are you thinking all or nothing? And are, you know, is what you're thinking, you know, going to help you flourish or not? Like, I think that's really important. Thank you so much for that, Josh. And thank you for this conversation. What a beautiful conversation. Love this. I love conversations that help you to think beyond you and to really think about the next human and to think about your life and what your life can really look like and feel like and be, right? And I love that. I love the aspects that you brought to this. Thank you so much for being here and hanging out with us. But before I let you go, I do want to know how people can support your work or follow you or, you know, listen to other talks you've had, things like that. Can you share that with us?
Sure. The easiest way to reach out is through my website, which is drjosh.solutions. So that's spelled D-R, not spelled out, Dr. J-O-S-H. .solutions is in place of a .com or .org. So it's a little confusing. It's one of those, oddities. But that'll have my email. That will have all my social media, and you could see I released a book this year, a memoir, if you will, about my life. You want to learn more about it?
What's the name of the book?
It's called "I'm Not Dead Yet: How I Turned My Misfortunes into Strengths."
That sounds good. So, how was that writing that book?
It was tough. It was tough. I tried writing it a few times. It took me this time around 14 months. So I released it in March of this year. So backtrack, I don't feel like doing math in my head, but
yeah. You know,
but prior to that, a couple of times I would sit there and look at, because I'm a two-time cancer survivor and there's a bunch of other things as well.
Oh my gosh.
I would sit in front of my computer and just start to cry, to bawl. And I realized that there were aspects of my life that I was still kind of processing through several years ago. And so I had to put it aside. So it's been a long time coming, but I was glad that I was finally able to sit and read it without, feeling like I was ripping open old wounds. And so there it is for the world to look at. And the point is to help people understand that you are not alone in the struggles that exist in this world. You are never alone, even if it feels that way. So hopefully that'll give some people some hope. And thank you so much for having me here. It's been a true honor. You've really touched my heart with this conversation too. So thank you. And thank you for what you do.
Thank you. I mean, what a beautiful conversation. And I didn't know, I don't know if I read it, that you were two-time cancer survivor. And I think that gives you also, Josh, a different perspective too. It gives you a clearer perspective, if you will, because I feel like when we are fighting things that are fighting literally our lives, right? We're fighting it. And to overcome that gives you a different perspective that maybe the things you're fighting about, you shouldn't be fighting about. Maybe the things that you're worried about, you shouldn't be worried about, right? My sister-in-law had stage 3 lung cancer. She's a non-smoker. But she told me yesterday, praise God, that she is 100% cancer free. So she beat it as well. And it just gives you a whole different thing, man. I'm so grateful that you have overcome it. I'm grateful to God that you are healed and that you're here and that I get to have this beautiful conversation with you. I don't take these things lightly because I know that we're not promised tomorrow. And you even know that deeper than I know that, right? And so these conversations touch my heart and soul, and I'm grateful for you. So grateful.
Thank you so much, Nina. That means a lot to me. That's so good.
Guys, this was so good. I love when I have conversations that put tears in my eyes and bring joy to my heart. So please make sure that you go ahead and follow Josh. I'm going to link all of his information below. I don't want you to miss anything. Pick up his book. When somebody has gone through so much and has the heart to go through that cathartic experience and write that book for you, I'm telling you, those are the books that cause impact in your life. So please make sure that you pick that up. And let's be kinder to one another. Let's love on one another. Let's support one another. Because at the end of the day, that really is what matters, is how you take care of one another, how you take care of your neighbor, how you take care of your friend, your family. That really is what matters. I promise you that when you are on your deathbed, you're not going to be worried about who you didn't like and how much hate and what Netflix show was on. You're going to think about who you want around you, how much love you got and how much love you gave. All right, guys, I love you so much. This is Nina Perez, Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. Until next time.